This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
What is up, DMV basketball fans? Welcome to another Believe in DMV Hoops. I'm Matt Moderno. I'm joined here today by former Maryland center and current overseas pro, Damonte Dodd. Damonte, thank you for coming on, man. How you doing?
I'm doing well. And yourself?
Hey, I'm great. Happy to be talking basketball with a fellow Terp. So this is awesome for me.
Yeah. Glad to be here.
For everybody listening, a lot of Maryland fans, I presume, will listen to this. But if you're not familiar, Damonte was a four-year starter at Maryland from 2013 to 2017, great defensive center. I think you're top 10 all time in blocks at Maryland still, which is a pretty good accomplishment considering all the big men have come through there. And just a guy I really liked watching play. I'm always a sucker for defensive bigs and guys with good footwork and some post moves. So I really enjoyed watching you play.
Appreciate it, man. I really do.
Before we get going too far here, just going to knock out some ad reads for everybody. We're brought to you by Stateside Vodka and their Surfside Hard Iced Teas, Hard Lemonades, every flavor you can think of. They're all delicious. And BetOnline, it's your number one source for all your summer sports, especially NBA playoffs right now are huge. Get the latest stats, news, and scores available for all your favorite teams. Get the latest odds, lines, and matchup reports, player props, everything you can think of. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to get in on the action. BetOnline, where the game starts. All right, so Damonte, you're playing overseas right now. Just fill the people in here a little bit. Where are you playing? How's it been going so far this season for you?
Well, for the most part, I was in Japan, and it's been well. Cultures, love it. Safe place, and it's been very different. You know, adjusting to like the food.
Sure.
But because I tell my family, they're like, oh, what's the Japanese food like? And I'm like, well, you know, you eat the Japanese food in America. And I'm like, you know, I love our Japanese food. And then I share with you, like, I'm like, oh, my God, our Japanese food tastes much better. But then I realized because their Japanese food is actually real and authentic.
Yeah.
Probably God knows what. So, but. Other than that, you know, Japan's cool. I also tell people they have 7-Eleven, which is hours. Okay. And I a lot of times going there at 5-4 in the morning when I can't sleep. And it's not like our 7-Eleven. It's kind of, if you want to say, I don't know, you know what Wawa is?
Yeah, exactly. For all the Marylanders, we know that one for sure.
Yeah, like Wawa Royal Farms. It's kind of like go in and actually get food and they make it for you. But yeah, this is the best.
Okay, that's cool. You've played in Japan in previous seasons too, right? This is not your first time there? No.
First year in Japan.
Oh, okay.
My first year. Basketball-wise, it's really nice. The competition is really good. My former teammate, actually, Jake Lehman, plays there too. That's awesome. And it's really good basketball. Like I said, the fans are really, really nice. You know, there's a lot of former like pros and high level guys that was in college or NBA that's over there. So it's really nice to, you know, finally get out there, because, you know, a lot of people want to get in the Asian market.
Sure.
So, you know, it's cool to be able to get there. And I had a pretty good year.
Were you and Jake able to catch up at all? Were you in the same parts of Japan or cross paths at all?
I didn't, because, you know, after, like, his games, it was different than mine. And
I gotcha.
You know, Jake has, if I'm not mistaken, 2-3 kids now.
A little tougher to get out and hang out.
Family out there. So, you know, I didn't really want to disturb him too much. But, I mean, we hit each other up. We knew we were out there. I mean, probably this year, you know, now that we knew that we were out there in the later part of the season.
I gotcha.
So, you know, we'll definitely be out there starting probably. You know, I don't know when we'll get out there, but we'll hopefully find some time to get up.
Are you planning on being back for next season in Japan too, or just see how it plays out?
I haven't made any decisions.
Gotcha.
So I don't know. A lot of people have been asking me, you know, here you should come, here you should come. So I don't know. I'm kind of just taking my time and just
for sure.
Different things like that, you know.
Makes sense. Yeah, I got to weigh the options at the end of the year and see what the best one is for you, right?
Exactly.
All right, maybe let's just back it up here a little bit. We'll talk about just sort of Maryland here for a while and then what led you to the overseas path. So talked about kind of your role in those Maryland teams. It's kind of the last line of defense for those guys, but that's how I saw you. What was your kind of take on yourself as a player with the Terps?
Well, I'm going to be honest with you. When I first came in, because I came out of high school, you know, I was averaging, I don't know, I don't want to get the numbers wrong, but I was somewhere between 20 rebounds and like 7 blocks a game. So I was on my team, I was a scorer.
Mm-hmm.
When I got to Maryland, it was more so coming in my freshman year. I remember a couple of practices, I was looking to score, and trying to score. Then, you know, Coach Turgeon told me, we don't need you to score. I'm like, so in my mind, I was like,
yeah. What do I do?
So I just kind of took on that role of just, okay, let me become the best rebounder, defensive player, you know, guard the best big fours, whatever the situation may be, able to switch balls, guards, because I have good feet. I was quick. So I just wanted to find my role, because if I wanted to score, I wasn't going to play.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like, okay, well, you know, so. And then my freshman year was kind of an adjustment period. It was kind of rough. I was still trying to figure things out. I was very nervous. I was very, very nervous. We played in some pretty big games. You know, we were the last team in the ACC.
Right. That's huge.
Went up against Jabari Parker at Duke, at North Carolina. We played some, and I was just like, man, this is high level. Mm-hmm. And played against, if I'm not mistaken, I think it was Shabazz Napier and Boatwright at Barclays.
Oh, which, yeah.
So it was different. It was an adjustment period. And then that next year, that's when Melo and Jared Nickens, Deion Wild, and all those guys came in. And we still had Jake Lehman. We had Des Wells. And it was just, okay. We had so many scores.
Mm-hmm.
What are you going to do? So I just took on that role of, you know, let me block shots and rebound, and turned out pretty well for me. So I'm not complaining.
Hey, we all appreciate it, man. That's what that team needed. So, you know, that's not always like probably the most fun role to play. And it's been cool to see some of your clips from overseas, because we're seeing some of that offensive game that you didn't get to show off in college as much. Like, I've seen you go coast to coast a bunch of times and start the break and some 17-foot baseline turnaround. So, like, it's in there. So it's cool to get to see that come out now.
Right, yeah. It's cool to be able to definitely showcase that. And, you know, my mom will always say, yeah, do it at Maryland. You know, probably could have. But if I was to do that at Maryland, I better make it.
Right, exactly.
Probably. But Ben, so it's just one of those things. Now, they kind of, when you go overseas or wherever, when you go professional, they kind of need you to do those things. They don't need you just... You got to be able to do what you do well, mm-hmm. but you bring other things to the table. So it's, like you said, it's cool to be able to showcase that and show people that I've had that. And I've always worked on those things when I was at Maryland. You know, sometimes, if you remember Roddy Peters, mm-hmm. our freshman year, we would go in the gym 10, 11 o'clock at night, and we bring people in and we run 5-on-5, or we just work. And we had a guy named Carrington. He used to work us out. God rest his heart. He died. But we would, you know, do all those things because, like I said, coming in as freshman, you got to do certain things mm-hmm. to be able to play. So, but you always want to work on your other skills when you have your time. So, you know, it's cool to, like I said, to just be able to showcase that now.
Yeah, it's paying off in the long run here. And I think to your point, like the international teams, when they bring the American player in, there's an expectation that you're going to get buckets too. And it doesn't matter what position you play.
Yeah, no, 100%.
Indiana coach, Tom Crean was their coach at the time while you were there, said you were the best screen and roll player in the Big Ten. That's kind of an under like valued thing, I think. But you talked about those scorers. I think you made their lives so much easier and allowed them to score pretty easily too. So I thought that was kind of a cool tidbit.
Yeah. I give a lot of that credit to, because I feel like Tom Izzo said the same thing to me when I was at the Big Ten conference my senior year. Mm-hmm. I think I came in that year injured, and it was if I was going to play or whatever the situation would be. And he came to me, he was like, "Man, you're a nightmare for us," or something like that. He said along the lines mm-hmm. that it was big to hear. You know, I appreciate coming, you know, especially coming from Tom Izzo.
Yeah, for sure.
But I give a lot of that credit to John Auslander and Juan Dick,
okay,
because they taught me with having a dangerous player like Melo. They used to call it just getting away, mm-hmm. and use your big body and getting away. So a lot of times I would just set screens and I see Melo coming. I'm like, okay, let's make his life easier. Mm-hmm. Set him good screens, because once he got past his guy and I set a good screen, that's him one on one with a big man.
Yeah.
There's going to be too many Big Ten big man Isaac guys like that was going to be able to, you know, keep them in front. So it was just like, once he crossed half court, let's set an up screen or some type of screen and hit your man.
Yep.
To let him get downhill. So I learned a lot of that from John Auslander and Juan Dixon, and they was always on me about that. Tay getting away. And, you know, and it started to work, and I'm starting to see. Then I started to see different screens and different ways to get them open, and Jake Layman, and even when Kevin Herter and guys like that come. So, you know, like I said, a lot of that credit definitely goes to John Auslander and Juan Dixon.
Yeah, John, another guy, kind of an underrated player himself there, and always did like the little things. So I'm glad to see that carry over. And for Maryland fans, like watching, it was never really clear exactly how involved Juan really was from a coaching perspective. So I think that's kind of cool to hear that tidbit of like what he actually got to do, because he was kind of relatively new to the coaching ranks when he was joining you guys.
Yeah, especially that 2016, that when we was preseason number one and all that, he was him and John Auslander, you know, I mean, Coach Turgeon, the main guy, Coach Cliff Warren and Bino, and Coach, I think Coach, I want to say Dustin Clark was on that staff, and I think Nemo Minvar was probably special ops director. Mm-hmm. But I'm telling you, John Auslander and you know, Juan Dixon, just not even coaching, because they gave a lot of, you know, I don't know, we used to run foreign set, which was the Spurs offense. They threw that in. They, you know, they kind of initiated that idea. And even in the off season before that season, I mean, just John Auslander will have guys up at 6, 7, 8 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
Come in, and he's have all these different NBA workouts.
That's cool.
Because at the time when we were in college, the individual workouts in my opinion, it was more to tire you out. And okay. I mean, better, but it was more to, you know, because you're working with Kyle Tarp in the weight room. Sometimes sometimes you start on the court. And it was more to like, okay, get you better, but you know, we gotta push you, man. It was mm-hmm. to hire you out and see if you were mentally and physically tough to get through these type of workouts. But John Auslander and Juan Dixon workouts, it was more on the NBA side of like, okay, we're going to do some skill, and we're going to do things. And that's what you're now seeing now more in college, period, anywhere you go. It's the individual workouts. I'm like, man, like these guys are doing like the NBA skill. And I'm like, that's what I wanted to do. Then we were running up and down, medicine balls and all types of crazy stuff. And it's so it's cool to see the transition of like how guys now the individual workouts is more the college, not the college, the NBA atmosphere workouts. So it's good for them.
Yeah, it's really interesting. You hear those kind of things now, just how much the game has changed at that level in the last like 5 or 6 years is kind of crazy to think about. And, you know, things evolve constantly. And I think they can work out more directly with guys on court. So it makes a big difference too.
Sure.
You grew up on the Eastern Shore. Like you said, you put up big high school numbers too. Had plenty of options for where to go for college. Why Maryland ultimately?
I chose Maryland for the main reason for my family to be able to watch me play and people come in, you know, not even just my family, but I had a, you know, a lot of fans, you know, from hometown, from deep. So I wanted them to be able to watch me play. And honestly, to be honest with you, my recruiting process was, it jumped to a high level so quick and so many school came and, you know, I was just a young kid and just blessed to have these offers. And I didn't know the magnitude of it, to be honest with you. One moment, you know, I was getting these college offers and it was like, oh, this is cool. Then the next thing you know, people are like, cut on the TV, you're on ESPN. And I'm like, oh, what's going on? And it's just, it jumped so quick. And I was just blessed. And then, you know, Maryland came and it was just one of those things. A lot of people, oh man, you should go to Maryland. You should go to Maryland. You know, people come watch you play. And, you know, it's kind of the best fit for me. And I'm, you know, I'm glad I chose that route.
You mentioned having a little bit of a kind of a, you had to ease your way into things, right? I guess as a freshman, only about 7 minutes per game and it being kind of tough. And the transfer portal wasn't really a thing then. And you definitely didn't get two time transfers. So I guess looking back on it now, like, if you think that would that, if that had been an option for you, I guess, is that something you would have strongly considered, just, you know, not having immediate success as a freshman?
You're saying like having a, just
if you would have had the option to easily transfer, I think you see kids a lot of times now, like you grew into a really good player at Maryland. Would you have waited it out if that wasn't the same kind of option for you then?
Yeah. I mean, okay, if you remember my freshman year, after that freshman year, you know, we didn't make the tournament. We didn't even make NIT. So a lot of people transferred, you know, to Paul Mitchell, Seth Allen, all those guys, Nick Fowles. Even we had walk-ons that transferred. And then some people on the girls team transferred. If I'm not mistaken, Lexi Brown was a top pick recruit. And they thought it was like a scandal that was going on. Now, I'm not going to, me being a naive freshman at the time, I'm like, well, everyone else is transferring. I it was definitely in my mind to transfer, but then I thought, I'm like, well, where would I go and what have I done for people to be like, oh, we want him? Because now you can't just go off my high school because, you know, that's from the past. Now it's like, what happened freshman year? And I didn't do anything. So it was one of those things where it was like, well, you stay and you toughen it out. And I remember Coach Turgeon having this, he had a meeting with us after pretty much was gone. He was like, if you're going to be in this room, you're going to be all in. If you're not, you can walk out right now. Basically, that's what he told us. And, you know, I'm looking around and I'm like, well, I like Dez. I like Jake Lehman. I don't have a problem. John Graham, one of my best friends. I'm like, hey, you know what? This is fine. Now, that off season was hell. I mean, they killed us. I remember every locker room, they took our pictures off the walls, they took the Gatorades, the waters, the food out of the locker room. They gave us, we was working with Kyle Tarp, and they gave us these plain shirts, plain shorts for like gray, these ugly big old shoes. It was like military training, and they were like, this is what we're gonna do every day. And Kyle killed us, and he's gonna earn. You're going to earn your water. You're going to earn everything. And we gradually earn water and Gatorade back in the locker room. We gradually earned our pictures and stuff. It was complete hell. I remember it was like, maybe I should have transferred because I was like, another day of this. This is crazy. But turned out good, man. Good, so.
That's crazy. I didn't know that. I mean, I remember them saying like, hey, like next year will be a different year. And that's the stuff, you know, that we heard from the outside. But yeah, that's kind of crazy to know they took it that seriously.
And we had no choice but for it to be a better year because right. Said to ourselves, we're not going through this another offseason. This is just crazy. I mean, it was absolutely crazy. I mean, and sometimes people say, well, it's more mental than physical, but no, it was both. Sometimes I think it was more physical than mental. It was just some really, really tough workouts. But like I said, then the next year, you know, Melo came in and like I remember his, you could ask him, I mean, if you ever have him on, I remember his first workout and he was like, he was laying on the treadmill. He was sprawled out with his shirt off and looked at me and we was walking back to our dorms, our apartments. And he was like, do we do that every week? And I was like, yeah, it was like, dude. I was like, yeah, bro, this is every weekend. I'm like, yeah. He was like, man, this is crazy. But, you know, turned out and look at us the next year, tournament. So, you know, all worked out for the best.
I played pickup at the time with a guy that trained Melo in high school, and he was like, hey, this kid is going to be really good. And I feel like obviously there were recruiting rankings and things like that, but like it wasn't the big business that it is now where you've seen like hours of footage of a guy by the time he ends up at a college. I guess how quickly did you guys know that he was the real deal? Like, was it pretty obvious right away that he was going to be like a big impact freshman?
No, because when he came in, when Melo came in, he had the skill. He could shoot it. He could dribble it. And of course, he developed that. But he couldn't guard nobody. And don't get me wrong, going against quick guys like Room Ram and Connor Lipinski that was there. And then you sometimes matching up with Jake Lehman and Des Wells. That's not easy, especially as a freshman. And then, you know, Maryland fans remember Deion Wally was good. Deion Wally, so he had to go against Deion Wally, Jared Nickens. It was tough. He had to learn, and we all had to. And as good as defensively as I was when I came in, I didn't know defensive assignments and things like that. I was strictly playing off talent of me being up high and block shots. But when I learned the game, and I think it was the same with him, once he actually learned defensively, then that's when it clicked. And it really clicked when we played him. It was maybe a tournament or something. We played against Iowa State or Iowa State, something like that. It was Georges Niang's team.
Yeah, Iowa State. Yeah.
Morris with the point guard. And we beat them. And we beat both of those teams. And then I think we came back and it was the Big Ten opener. And then I think we played Minnesota. I think we beat them. And then I think we played and we saw after that tournament, I was like, me and John Graham, because he had like 24 points both games. And of course, Dez did what he did, you know, Jake did what he did. But I mean, Melo was a stand, everyone was talking about him. And I was like, I was more impressed because I knew he could score, but I was like, he's Gardner Morris. He actually did a really, you know, a decent job on him. Mm-hmm. I mean, Morris was one of the top point guards in the country. Didn't make any turnovers, nothing like that. He's in the NBA now, I think, with the Wizards. Really good, and I was really shocked at how he guarded. And I was like, oh yeah, okay. Now he's starting to click for him. And then when we played Michigan State at home. And he crossed Tum Tum, and Tum Tum dropped, and he hit that. And then after that, I mean, I was in awe, but then you started to see it all come together. Instagram following went from 3,000 to 10,000. Then you just saw all the media and everything. And then, because Tum Tum was the best defender in the Big Ten.
Yeah.
And I was just like, oh, he's coming. He was coming, and then it just took off. His confidence just went from here to there. And then it got to a point where he couldn't even walk on campus.
I believe it.
It was too big. He was too big. And I was just like, I look at John, like, because I keep saying John, but John was my best friend on the team pretty much. I look at John, I'm telling John, I was like, kid, he won't be here next year.
Right. Yeah, that's what we thought.
He won't. There's no way he'll be here next year. He went from, I mean, he was a McDonald's All-American, but he wasn't on no draft boards before he came or anything like that. By the middle of the season, he was a top 15 pick projected. I was like, oh, yeah.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity. Much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save over $775 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the home gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $779 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you sell everywhere, from their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system. Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. What I love about Shopify is how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/westwoodone, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/westwoodone now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/westwoodone.
When he decided to come back as a fan, selfishly, I was like, oh, this is amazing. But because we didn't expect it either. And kind of to your point, like, all right, non-conference, I'm like, all right, guys will start to figure him out a little bit. You know, like once they get to the Big Ten, it's a little more rough and tumble. They'll officiate it differently. And once people see him twice, and he just kept not slowing down. And that was cool to watch. And like I said, you guys made it a lot easier for him to do that too.
He didn't slow down, because at some point I thought also, I didn't think he was going to slow down, but I thought he was going to hit a roadblock. Mm. He was going to hit one of those. They talk about that freshman curve, about it, like, oh, you know, he didn't hit it. He just kept excelling and just any guard, Denzel, about anybody he came across that was supposed to be that, he killed him. And I was just like, confidence is one hell of a drug, because what can you do with him? And like you said, I was shocked, because we didn't even know. After the season, he kind of packed his stuff up and started, you know, go get your money, man. I told him, hey, you know, good for you. I'm happy for you. He started packing his stuff up, and I was totally prepared to have a new point guard. I don't know who it was going to be, but sure. I was prepared for a new point guard. And then I don't know, out of nowhere, one day we got a text in the group chat, and I saw him come back to the dorm. Like, what are you doing here? And I checked my phone. And like, yeah, Melo's back for another year. Melo's back for another year. The coach?
Yeah, bro. Right.
He was like, yeah, I decided to come back. And I was like, I'm happy. It'd be cool. Nice to have you back. Like, but whoa, what's in my mind? What are you thinking? Like, coming back. But hey. You know, he came back, and it is what it is. Always, you know, we still talk today. I always tell him that if you would have left, I think things would have been totally different.
Yeah, you just kind of get that stigma. And it's like, well, he didn't ever get better after his freshman year. It's like, yeah, because he was one of the best guards in the country as a freshman. It's hard to do much better than that.
And that's the downfall of it, because that's why, you know, guys now, you got to go when you're hot.
Yep.
You know, and fortunately now everything's changed. I was in college with college. Because, you know, you can go, and even my, when I was there my junior year, I think we could have, that was the first year where you could leave, try out, test the waters, but not agent. But now, you know, like I said, I wish we were in college now with the NIL deals and stuff. Cause I just think about, like, man, how we had the Running Man and how we had that popular.
Oh, yeah.
I know how much money would have got off that. It was, and we were a popular team.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't even imagine, but yeah, man, him, you know, it's hard because it's like, you come back and it's like, okay, well, we've seen everything. Like you said, you were the, so what more can you do? I was like, the only thing I could think that he could have done better was come down the lane and start dunking on people.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
That wasn't him, but I was like, that's the only thing you could do next to impress people, where it's like, okay, we'll make him the top five draft pick or something. But I'm like, other than that, it's like, he showed everything, you know? So it's kind of sucked, but you know, it is what it is.
Shout out Mello. He just won a Russian league championship for CSKA Moscow and was MVP of the league in the finals. So still killing it out there.
Big time. That's hard to do where he's at. Right? For people that don't know, that's big time league. That's a big time team. You know, Mike James, that mm-hmm. he was there, left, went to play with Kevin Durant and them for a little while with the Brooklyn Nets at that time. That was basically his team. And, you know, so for Mello to go over there, do that on that team at that level and get that award, that honor, huge. Shout out to Mello. That's huge. That's very, very huge.
Your guys' 2014-2015 tournament run, the year you guys played West Virginia, and you played basketball and they played football on the court and beat the shit out of Mello that whole game. I think he ended up with a concussion, if I remember correctly. But that team, I thought you guys were like, I mean, I think your next round matchup was probably Kentucky, which would have been a pretty tough matchup. But I thought that team had like something, some special juice to it. And then they just, they turned into a brawl on the court. What do you remember about that game and any other kind of standout games from your college career?
If you want to know the main thing I remember from that game is, it's funny because I can look back on it now and laugh, but Mello's concussion was because of me. And it was Maryland fans. I'm sure they'll comment or however they'll tell you, but, there's a lot of people was like, Dodge single-handedly kicked us out of the tournament. Because
did he run into you?
Yeah, so if you go back to watch that play, they threw the ball over, and Mello was kind of backpedaling back or something like that. I think he tripped over his own feet and or something. And I was running back because the dude was going to have a lot of them. I was going to go blind. Mello fell, and I kneed him in the head.
I forgot about that part.
Yeah, and that's how he got his concussion. And I always tell him, I'm like, what's on you? Because I'm like, what are you spraying back? What were you going to do in that play?
Yeah, but right.
Either get dunked on or look at him. I was like, so you probably should have just let me in. You should stay that on offense. But yeah, that was a tough team.
I remember from that game was like Juwan Staten and those guys just like pummeling him the whole time.
Yeah, it was nothing none of us could do. You know, we prepared and we worked on press offense and how to break that press, and nothing what we could have done could have prepared us. It was just a different, and shout out to Bob Huggins and that team. And you said Staten, I forget the center. I feel like they had a big center. I can't think of his name. I think his name maybe was Devin Williams. I think he might have been the center. That's on that. Because I played it with, he was on my team as in the G League, so I think it was him. But nothing we could have done could have prepared us. I mean, we tried everything. Mello, you know, they were trapping him. They were beating him up. We tried putting Dez to bring the ball. He was beating him up. Jake Layman, absolutely not. They were just too physical. They were all, and they were athletic. They were fast.
Mm-hmm.
They were very aggressive, and it was none. Dion tried. I mean, we tried everything. Even, I think, was Rashad Pack on that team? I think.
Sounds right. They started to run together a little bit at this point in my life, but yeah.
I mean, we threw everything. You tried the different things, and nothing worked. I mean, they were just way too scrappy and fast. And then on defense, when we were guarding them, we were nowhere near the as aggressive as they were was with us. And that's the thing, you know, when you have that identity as a defensive team, you get away with things.
Yeah.
Referees know, like, well, that's how they play like that all throughout the year. If we play like that, it's like, oh, you don't play like that, so we're going to call fouls on you guys. This is what they do. This is their identity. So it's just kind of one of those things. It was just like, we didn't accept defeat. I mean, we fought it out, but in the back of your mind, I'm sure as fans watching, it's just like, man, they just up another level defensively. There's nothing we could do. But I do think we would have been the best team to match up with that Kentucky team.
I swear to God, I was just gonna, it's like literally the next thing on my rundown is it just like weirdly kind of made sense to me of like, I think you guys could give them a real run.
Yeah, I think we would have matched up with them a little bit differently because of our size wise. I'm not saying that we're going to win because I don't remember who was on that Kentucky team.
That was the Carl Towns, Devin Booker crew. I mean, they had like, and that was the one where Booker didn't even actually start on that team. So
they won that?
No, they lost in the finals to, or in the semifinals to Wisconsin that year. But they had the Harrison twins. Willie Cauley-Stein was on that team. Trey Lyles was on that team.
Yeah, I think we would have matched up with them very well. Like I said, I'm not going out on a limb and saying we would have beat them, but I think we would have matched up with them well. But, if you look back, it's kind of destined because it's like if we would have got to Elite Eight or Final Four, we beat Wisconsin that year. You know, we beat them. So, you know, it was one of those things that what made that year so fun compared to the year of coming in AP number one and having all the talent we had in 2016, it was we didn't have anything to play for or we cared or anything. It was just like you had nothing to lose.
Yeah, no pressure.
No pressure. Go out there and play. And we shocked a lot of people. We were ranked. That team was ranked throughout the year. Ranked team. So we had no pressure. We went out and played, and I don't think anyone had us coming in saying Maryland was going to be in the tournament because they didn't make the tournament. They didn't even make the NIT the previous year. So there's no expectations they were going to be in the tournament. It was just like, hey, man, go out there and play. All that hard work y'all did throughout the summer, preseason, now just go out there and play and have fun. And that did. And it was fun, man. It was so fun. The chemistry off the court, with, you know, with the freshmen coming in, we were a goofy, silly, stupid team, man. I mean, make anybody laugh. I mean, we were just that goofy and laughed at anything and the team dinners and all that stuff, man. It was just a fun team. It was just a fun team. And I think that helped us on the court. And, you know, even Coach Church and them, they would laugh at us. We'd be at a team dinner away in Wisconsin or something. And they see us over there just busting out laughing. They're like, man, these guys are so freaking goofy. And it's just what it was, you know?
That team the next year, it felt like the weight of expectations got to everybody a little bit. Like everybody felt a little tighter, that you could kind of feel that, you know, being in the arena and stuff too. Was that kind of the vibe with the team? Just like now that there's more pressure, expectations, all this kind of stuff?
100%. 100%. It was one of those things, man, that our practices that year had people there. People were at our practices watching our practices. I'm like, what's going on? And everyone thought they were going to the NBA that year, including my. Sure. I remember Coach Church coming to me. He had a meeting with me. He was like, hey, man, you know, there's a lot of talk about, you know, this person, NBA, this person going to the NBA. But he said, your name is buzzing. And he was like, you could be one of those sleepers. He was like, so focus. And I had it in my. I'm gonna leave. This can be the year I'm gonna go to the, you know, and I don't think that affected my play, but that should not have been my focus.
Sure.
But it was a lot of guys' focus. Like I said, we had Rashid Suleiman come in and top, you know, recruit McDonald's. He had the hype, and it was just one of those things. I think our goals were not where they should have been. I think it was, you know, because at we had, like I said, people at our practices. We had NBA scouts and you know, big-time people coming in to see certain guys. And It was going on. EP number one in the country. So it was just, you know, you couldn't really walk anywhere without people trying to get to you and talk to you. And
were you guys taking all your classes, like actually in class on campus still? Because I know a lot of guys are fully online at this point.
Yeah. This was the time where, you know, it wasn't none of that online. Yeah. You know, you had to go to class on it, which made it even harder because you know, people, I guess the word is starstruck. Mm-hmm. And mind you, this is a time where Stefon Diggs was on campus.
Right. Some big names. Yeah.
So it's one of those things where it's just like, man, it was just a lot going on. And we took basketball seriously. Don't get me wrong. But I just think that if we had a little bit more focus on the basketball aspect and not on what's going on after the season and everything that, you know, if we just focus because that team should have been a Final Four national championship team, and we lost to Kansas. No knock to Kansas. Kansas was good. They had my former point guard play with at in high school, Frank Mason, Wayne Seldon, Perry Ellis, Landon Lucas. They had really good players. Mm-hmm. He matched up just as well as them, but came up short, and it was just one of those things. It just sucks because, like you said, for Melo to give up all that he gave up to come back, and then we only make Sweet 16. I just really wish, you know, that's one of my biggest regrets. I really wish we could run that back and just, because I think if we would have made a Final Four or even got to the national championship or won it, I think a lot of guys would have been in a better situation. Best, you know, Melo's doing well. Jake Layman's doing well. Jake Layman even had a pretty
good, had a good run
in the NBA. Diamond's doing well. I still talk to Diamond, but Rasheed's doing well. So I think Rob Carter, but I still think if we went further, I think a lot of people, I think that whole starting five, I think would have got drafted a lot higher than what they did. Especially throwing out names, especially Diamond Stone. I think he originally went where they had him gone, but it's just we underachieved so much that year.
It's tough too to feel like that was an underachieving team. Like you played a Kansas team that was really loaded. And by the way, those guys had played together for multiple years too. Like Perry Ellis was in like his 11th year of college basketball at that point. Like Frank Mason had been there with them a couple of years. Like it was a tough ask. Like that's a tough matchup.
Yeah. And the thing, like you said, the thing that we underachieve, there's a lot of people that would have loved to say, we made the Sweet 16.
Or we may finish top 20 in the country. I'll take that.
People love to say that, but to us, to me.
Yeah, I feel you.
Someone else, but I think if I'm speaking for the majority, it was an underachievement. And, you know, I just wish that, you know, we could have took that a lot further, because the one thing about the tournament, as you see, that's why you see all these, you know, low majors or people you never heard of knocking off the number two, number one. It's just one game. Mm-hmm. You win one game, you advance. You win one game, you advance. And I remember when we was in Spokane, Washington, it was like, those games were tough. Mm-hmm. We won them, but it's like each game you win, the more confidence you build.
Sure.
That's how it was. When we won those two games, it's like, okay, we're going in the right direction. So it's just one of those things, like I said, it's just tough to look back on, you know.
Well, the second game of a weekend is especially tough too. That second round game when you have to like prepare for somebody on like almost no turnaround. Like you don't get the week leading up to it to get ready for a matchup. I think that's where you see some of these upsets too. So it's another tough ask.
100%.
At some point, probably toward the tail end, I would think, of your Maryland tenure, fans started to sour on Mark Turgeon a little bit. Did you guys feel that on the team? Like, did that throw vibes off at all that he was kind of taking this so much, you know, a certain amount of grief from fans and stuff like that?
I didn't really start to see it till after I left.
Okay.
Because I wasn't really into all the noise. I didn't really see it, or I tried to tune it out. So I didn't a lot of it until I left Maryland. But I was on a podcast, I forget whose podcast it was, and I had the same question come up to me, and I'm gonna say the same thing. It's hard to see, and it's deep because everyone gives him. Coach Turgeon used to always tell us in the locker room if we would lose or whatever, or if anything would come up that was bad publicity towards us, he was like, "You know what, guys, I'm gonna take the blame. A lot of this is on you." But he always would go out in the media and take the blame and take it on him. And I've always respected him for that because he didn't have to. Because you have some coaches that go out there and say, "Well, this player needs to do this. This player help put that on that player." But he never did that to us. You know, he always took the blame. And it just people create these narratives and all this stuff and say, you know, oh well, this that you know, he's the reason for this. And it's just like, he was a great coach. Look at what Maryland was before until he came. They weren't doing anything, no tournament runs or nothing. And then he comes in and brings these big recruits. And look, all the guys put in the NBA, Jake Lame and Alex Lynn, top lottery picks, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's just like, they just, oh, well, with all those top teams, he never done. I'm like, you can only put so much on the coach, because the coach can give you the plays. He can give you the schemes. It's to the players to go out and execute. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you know, some of that blame has to come back on us. And, you know, so it's not all on coaching. It's one thing if, you know, the players go out there and they just look completely lost and the plays just aren't working or whatever. Okay, then you can, you know, you can put the majority on the coach. But that wasn't the case because we were winning, winning a lot of games. But at the end of the day, we fell short. We didn't execute. We didn't do some of the little things. And but that has nothing to do with Coach Turgeon. And that's why I say, you know, Coach Turgeon always been the best coach I've ever had. Taught me a lot. And that was the main thing. He taught you a lot on the court, but he taught you more off the court. He taught us how to become young men and how to grow into adults. And, you know, they cared a lot about school. You know, Coach Bino, Coach Clark, Coach Warren, especially Coach Warren, was like, you know, at the end of the day, eventually the basketball is going to go flat.
Yep.
And, you know, you're not going to be able to play. So you got to have your education or something to fall back on. And they were huge on that. We would have academic meetings and different things like that. And just talk about life. He asked you about your family. And what do you want to do after basketball? What do you want to do? What can we do to help you while you're at Maryland? Do you want to do grad? Do you want to different things? Like, all coaches aren't having those conversations with you. That's what the fans don't see. They just see the basketball.
No, it's great.
But they don't see the, you know, what they're doing to help create you to be successful in life after basketball or while you're still playing basketball. And that's, like I said, that's the narrative that they spin. And that's the unfortunate part. But, you know, narratives is a part of the game. Look at the WNBA, what's going on.
Yeah, it's tough. That's
50 million narratives going on with that. So.
Honestly, that's such great perspective, and I appreciate you providing that too, because that isn't stuff that we see, and that's not what's reported out. And, you know, I do think, like, personally as a fan, like, I was ready for a fresh start by the end of his run too, and I obviously he was, because it just seemed like one of those things, like, this is kind of ended for both parties here, and a clean break is good sometimes, but early on it felt like he was a victim of his own success. It's like, well, we only got to the Sweet 16 where we played Kansas. And it's like, yeah, you built a team that had, you know, Final Four level expectations too. And yeah, you fell a little short, but to your point, it's a one game, you know, do or die scenario that's going to happen. And I think, you know, more years than not, I think fans were pretty happy with kind of the overall product in a vacuum.
And then it's the what if of that when they had COVID and they won, they split. Yeah. Who knows what that team would accomplish?
That's true.
Could have went really far. They could have won a national championship. That was a really good team. And Cowan,
Jalen Smith,
Bruno Fernando maybe on that team.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that was the year after Bruno.
Okay, Bruno, but yeah, Sticks, Ayala, all those guys. You know, they had a Wiggins.
Mm-hmm. Aaron Wiggins.
They had a chance. So it was just like, that was another good team he had, and. unfortunate that COVID happened, but who knows? Could happen.
Yeah, the Wiggins, Cowan, Smith, Morsell team. I was like maybe one of my favorite teams, other than you know, your two middle year teams were obviously so fun to watch too. All right, worst Big Ten fan base that you guys had to go against.
Worst Big Ten fan base.
Either most annoying or said the worst shit to you, like whatever kind of way you want to interpret worst.
I mean, it's probably either going, it's a toss up between Michigan State and Indiana.
Okay.
Those were both pretty rough crowds. And not even because they were saying bad things. It was so loud. Mm-hmm. Indiana. I mean, it was when they had Yogi Ferrell, Floyd Williams, all those guys. I mean, it was points on the court where we couldn't hear Melo calling a play.
Right.
We didn't know when Coach Turk came out. It was so loud at that stadium. It was insane. And the fans did a good job of, you know, doing that so they could throw us off because mm-hmm. you think. And if you go back and watch those games, you would see a lot of us just standing because we didn't know what was going on. Like it was just kind of one of those things where you just had to remember, like, okay, we're gonna run this play two times in a row.
Yeah.
Because if I try and call another play, you're not gonna be able to hear it. So that Purdue, that was I'm not Purdue, Michigan State, they were more fans that were talking to you.
Okay.
They were fans, oh, you suck, they had kind of things about your life they would read and kind of reminded me of Duke.
Yeah.
My freshman year, like their fans kind of had
the cheat sheets and stuff. Yeah.
New things about you. And it's just like, it's kind of hard to play when there's some things they're saying is factual. And it's just like, how did you know that? yeah. How'd you know that's my mother's name? That's insane. What's going on? But those two are very tough. But I always like playing in those type of environments. It made it fun for me. Always enjoyed that.
There was like a little Michigan State rivalry there at the time too. Like you guys would kind of give it back and forth with them. And that's kind of cool to hear though, that it was a pretty spirited one. And the Indiana ones, those guys are just crazy. Like they're still crazy. Even when they're bad, they're crazy. So that also not surprising.
Yeah. 100%.
Separate from the fan base, just the team itself. Was there a particular Big Ten team or any team in the country that you just like really did not like going up against, or one the opposite that you really liked going up against? Like, hey, I always play well against this team, or I enjoy the matchup against this team, that sort of thing.
I hated playing against Purdue.
Okay. Just because they were all so big?
They were too.
Yeah.
At one point of my career where they had a lineup where it was rest in peace to Biggie Swanigans, Caleb Swanigans, rest in peace to him. Caleb Flanagan's was the three. AJ Hammonds was the four. Isaac Hoss was the five.
It's the biggest team ever, yeah.
What were you supposed to do against that?
Yeah.
I mean, it was a games where I play against them either. Most of the time I was in foul trouble.
Mm-hmm.
Or I would leave the game with a black eye or a bloody bruise because they just were throwing elbows. They were just... Mm-hmm. And Matt Craner always done a great job of being physical, making this big physical because, you know, I heard about the workouts, things they would do. And that's why they were that aggressive because, you know, they trained like that.
Mm-hmm.
And they were just huge, man. I see them on the schedule and I'm like, God, give me strength because I need it. But I hated playing against them. Probably team I like playing against probably was Indiana for me because Indiana didn't care if you scored. I would get dunk after dunk after dunk. They were a small team. They kind of was, you know, the Warriors. They had a small center. Sometimes Troy Williams would be guarding me and I would set screens and they would just let me roll down the middle and dunk it. And I'm like, oh my God, this is easy. But on the flip side of things, that's what made them so good because, okay, you score, but we're going to get the ball out so fast, Yogi Ferrell push it, and now next thing you know, I'm trailing and they're throwing a lob from half court to Troy Williams.
Right.
It's just like, well, you know, so I would have a 15, 18 point game, but then on the other hand, it's just like, well, we lost because it was a track meet. They just ran. So
Yeah, Troy was like 6'7", basically, if that, maybe. And just he was like lightning down the court in transition. So that was another. I think that Thomas Bryant ran the court pretty hard your last year or two. And like, he's another guy.
So fast. But if you go on YouTube and you look at their workouts, you see that's how they train.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense. You mentioned John Graham being one of your buddies, best buddies off the court there. But any, I don't know, favorite teammates to play with on court, guys that like you just sort of gelled and clicked with the way you played?
Besides Melo, Rashad Pack.
Okay. Because
Rashad Pack had a chemistry of, I always would hit him on the back door. We'd run the horns. And he always know, he comes up, go back door. And I always would hit him, and he'd get a layup. And it was just fun to play with him because he was such a smart basketball player. And he knew how to cut and how to move. And I would find him. So besides Melo, Rashad Pack would definitely be up there.
Yeah, if he's not in coaching right now, I'd be shocked if he isn't at some point in time, because he's a guy that you just kind of, obviously it's in his family too, but like you get that kind of vibe of coach on the floor type.
Oh, he'll be a great coach, 100%.
And he was on that 2014-2015 team that played West Virginia, by the way. I that's coming back to me here a little bit. All right, any other favorite Maryland stories here that we can wrap that part of the show with?
Favorite Maryland stories? I don't know. I think one of the probably, like I said, the Running Man, that whole era.
Sure. Just seems fun to be around.
Yep. Yeah, that whole era. I mean, from that first video I was recording, and we had the little laundry cart, and Jared rolled it out, and Jalen Brantley was in it, and I'm recording. And he jumps out, and it was perfect timing. He jumps out, and they start hitting the dance, and it just rolls so well. And I'm just recording, and I'm like, something might come from this. In my mind, I didn't tell him this, but sure. In my mind, like, looking at this video and the way he jumped out, I'm like, it's just too. I'm like, this is too good. I'm like, something might come from this.
So that didn't take like 25 takes. They just nailed it kind of naturally. The first, wow, that's amazing. There you go.
That's just what it was. And then I just remember we posted it, and all of us posted on our social media. And of course, it started catching buzz. And then the next thing I know is Turgeon, or who was it? Someone called us in and was like, Ellen DeGeneres.
Yeah.
I was like, hold on.
Like, what's happening?
Like, nothing that. Yeah, they was like, yeah, they want you. I was like, come on, man. No way, man. It was true. They went out there and they went on the show. And I was like, man, of course, after that, we had to keep going.
Yeah.
And do more videos. And then, you know, what ended up happening, our most popular video was, they got us the most views on, and I think they played it on Ella too, was the one when, it was me, Jared. Jalen wasn't even in it because Jalen was somewhere at the time. It was me, Jared, and Melo, because Melo took place for Jared at Jalen's time. And he has no rhythm and he can't dance, to be honest. He'll tell you. But we were doing the dance, and this wasn't even planned or nothing. And I was acting like Jared. I was acting like he was giving me a haircut.
Mm.
We would always do a thing on a team where we smack each other's necks. Just you know, just fun. I think. It started because as a freshman, when Melo, Jared, and Dion came in, they used to smack Dion's neck all the time. Dion would get mad, but it was hilarious. But they were pretending we were doing a dance. I'm pretending I'm getting a haircut, and I'm in a chair doing the dance. And Jared smacks my neck, and my response was I was actually shocked. So I looked at him, and I'm like, dude, what the heck? And he starts laughing, and that ended up being our most popular video and got us the most views. But it just took off, man. Next thing you know, you saw the big MLB teams on it, MLS, the soccer, Kyrie Irving, I think. I mean, everyone was doing this dance. And then, of course, the college basketball, Villanova.
Oh, yeah, I had to. Yeah.
Virginia Tech and like all these teams started catching on and they started doing it. And I'm just like, it really got big. And then they got to the point where we would be on campus and let's just say we would go out or we'd go to a frat house or something like that for a party. We'd be walking down the street and people would start playing the song and like, y'all do the dance.
I want you to do it. Yeah, oh, geez.
It just became super popular. And give credit to the kids from New Jersey that started that.
Mm.
And they started that dance, but we definitely made it popular.
Yeah, you blew it up, yeah.
Just cool. That was a cool experience just to see how all that took off and just how the whole campus was doing it. And I was just like, it's amazing how one video could turn into something so big. And we kind of needed that, Buzz, because honestly, that was after we just lost to in the Sweet 16.
Mm-hmm.
Not to say people were disappointed with us. I'm sure some was, because, like I said, that was an underachievement. But that kind of took the steam, all the pressure, and was like, okay, look at them. They're going viral for this. Look at this Maryland team. Oh my god! And it kind of took a little bit of pressure off of us. So that was, like I said, it was cool. It was a fun time to you know, be a part of.
Sometimes you just need like the release valve, right? That, like, you know, after that like pressure filled season, it's just like, all right, we're resetting, you know, we've got the fun back here a little bit, and it clears the air for everybody too.
And the thing is, after, you know, you can ask anyone on our team, we always, that's what we did. After the locker room, we always danced, and we have videos of us doing stupid, silly dances. We cut on the music and we just dance, and because that's what we did. We were a goofy, silly team. Like I said, that just happened to be the one time it went viral.
and that's probably the kind of stuff I would imagine you remember most about a lot of those teams, right? Is like the fun with the guys and road trips and stuff like that. Less about like who set what pick where and what game, or, you know, who would, you know, to pin down, like that kind of stuff.
Yeah, relationships you build. That's what you remember the most. Relationships you build. Those, you know, you remember the basketball parts. You know, of course, I'll never forget when Melo hit that shot against Wisconsin. You know, those type of things you never forget. But, you know, I'll remember way more fun stories off the court than I can remember on basketball. It's, you know, it is what it is.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity. Much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save, too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save over $775 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the home gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $779 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you sell everywhere, from their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system. Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. What I love about Shopify is how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/westwoodone, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/westwoodone now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/westwoodone.
Devontae, I did not mean to keep you this long just talking about the Maryland portion. Are you good to go a little bit longer? I definitely want to talk overseas here for a few minutes.
Yeah.
All right, cool. So, switching to your professional career here, you've played Mexico, Poland, Czech Republic, Kosovo, Japan. Basketball's taken you around the world, which is amazing. And that's so cool for you're from Maryland, I'm from Maryland, you know, like being able to go play all over the world, you know, to play this game has got to be pretty incredible. Just, do you ever sit back and kind of reflect on, hey, these are some wild places I've been, you know, chasing this orange bouncing ball?
Yeah, 100%. I reflect all the time. I always reflect after each season. Mm-hmm. Look back and I'm just like, man, you know, going into year six or whatever it is, I'm like, man, I've been through some places, and it gives you a perspective on life, more so than basketball. And that's what I'm most thankful for, because, you know, I could have kept chasing the NBA route. And, you know, at one point I was there, I did NBA workouts. I was in the G League, and, you know, it just wasn't for me, and God didn't want me to do that. He wanted me to play overseas. Cool, whatever. And I think it was more, you know, better because, like I said, the aspect it gave me on life part, because it's been places, you know, I've been, especially like Mexico. And I just look and I'm just like, man, these conditions are so bad. These people, they, you know, not all places, but it's rough over there. And then you got the cartel running most things and things going on. It's very dangerous. And then you wonder why people are trying to cross the border. Yeah. You know,
gives you that life perspective to kind of see it firsthand like that, right?
Exactly. Looking in from America, you're like, oh, well, you know, you should do it the right way. But then if you go over there and you live there for however, however long I was there, and you see how bad it is, how dangerous it is for kids, you wouldn't be so mad at them coming here. Mm-hmm. It is what it is. So it just gives you a perspective on life, and it makes me appreciative to be, to live in America and all the freedom that we have. Because, I mean, some of these places I've been, it's just like, these people don't have, you know, it's not a dictatorship like North Korea, but damn near. And
tough.
Like, it gives you that perspective to, I tell people all the time, just stay humble and be appreciative of what we have in America. Because we have it really good, even though things are very expensive, you know, whatever, healthcare and all these different things. But, man, we have it really well. We have it good, and we have one of the best, you know, if we had to go to war or whatever, we have one of the best, you know, people to fight for us and different things like that. So, like I said, we have it very well. And then especially in current times, if you look in all the stuff that's going on with, you know, Palestine and, yeah, and all that stuff, children getting killed, and oh God, it's pure insanity. And you know, so it just, like I said, it just gives you a different aspect on life. So I'm glad a little orange basketball took me to all these places, because it's definitely humbled me, and it, like I said, it definitely gave me a different perspective on life for sure.
That's awesome. And that's a great way to look at it, and great perspective to have too. Any favorite places you played in, like somewhere like, hey, I could see myself coming back here to live someday, like that was that nice, or anywhere you'd want to go back and play a second time, that sort of thing?
It would probably be two places. Probably would be Japan and Bahrain.
Okay.
Very Japan, because Japan is just very advanced, very clean. Just easy to just, the people are just so nice, just easy to get along with and just be there. And it's just super, super nice. I mean, I just love Japan. It just isn't, I don't think there's one bad thing about Japan that I could think of. And there's a lot of Americans living there, and, very affordable, very, very affordable to live there. And, even though the only thing about Japan is they drive on the other side of the street. That
takes some getting used to, right?
It takes some getting used to. But other than that, it's very nice. Bahrain, because Bahrain's beautiful. Middle East is beautiful. Very rich place. And it's right on the water. Oh, man, it's so nice. Weather's nice every day. That's definitely a place I wouldn't say I would go live, but it's definitely a place I would go back and play. Like the dairy, like it was very nice. People were very nice. Like I said, I just loved just the scenery. The scenery was just, it was so nice out there. And I could just, you know, I was having one practice a day, and it was at night. So I had the whole day I would
explore
go
and stuff.
Explore, go to the beach, you know, just you know, it was just nice. I was like, man, people actually live here. This is wonderful.
That's pretty awesome. That was going to be my next question. So yeah, you got a future in podcasting here if you want it, because the segue there is perfect. What are the schedules like for international teams? Like the one practice a day, is that pretty common? One game a week? Like what are we talking in most places?
So in Europe, most times it's two practices a day in the morning. During preseason, you know, in the morning you'll get your conditioning in and then in the afternoon you'll get your practice in and start getting ready. And then during the season, it's still two practices, but you'll come in the morning. It might be lifting and shooting, and mm-hmm. then you'll practice in the afternoon. That's normally how it is in Europe. But when you get to Japan, the Asian market, it's normally one practice a day. And they normally will give you like, hey, we have this gym. And in our team, we had a place called, it's called Banco, and it was a 24-hour weight room. So you should go whenever you want. I'll go in 4 a.m. and go lift. You should go in whenever you want. You have the little app on your phone and it unlocks the door. You use your face scan or whatever mm-hmm. and it unlocks the door. And normally in Japan, you have one practice a day. Every day, practice a day. Sometimes.
That doesn't sound too bad.
No, it's actually great. Only thing about normally in Asia is market is your games will. I'm speaking from Japan, it's back-to-back. So you either play Friday, Saturday, or you either play Saturday, Sunday, and that's every week back-to-back. So, yeah, the one practice is nice, but it's tough. If you play a good team and they beat you by 40 the first day, then you got to go see them again the next day. And it's like, ugh.
That's a little bit of a drain, I'm sure.
Yeah, I got to play these guys again. Right. But it's not too hard on your body. But in Europe, though, they're going to push you. I mean, two practices every day for the whole season is just definitely kind of rough.
What's the food situation like? Is it tough to find places to eat in some of the places that you've been? Like, or is it, you know, you have to get used to the local food quickly? Are there American options in most places you've been?
Yeah, it's pretty, like I said, depends where you are. Like in Europe, it's you're always going to have your typical McDonald's, KFC, Burger King. Places like that, pretty much anywhere you go in Europe, even in Asia, always gonna have those. But yeah, you just gotta get used to the traditional foods. And most places in Europe and you know in Asia, it's gonna be rice and noodles and different things like that. Mm-hmm. Europe normally some type of rice and chicken, and that's normally the main foods that they eat. Pasta for sure, pasta is huge. And Bahrain in the Middle East. They had everything. I mean, they had stuff I didn't even know was in America that I tried. It was a place called, they called Fuddruckers.
No, yeah.
Never heard of it. I tried it in Bahrain. I'm like, oh, is this a, like a Middle Eastern chain? No, this is American. Yep.
Right. Yeah. Where's that at? Yep.
So good. It was so good. And they had everything. They had Wendy's, they had Domino's, pizza. I mean, whatever. The only thing they didn't have that I was like, would have put them over the top if they had your Chick-fil-A and Chipotle.
There you go. Yep.
I was like, I'd probably never leave this place because I could eat Chipotle and Chick-fil-A every day.
But a friend of mine coached in China one time. He's like, man, I ate McDonald's every day after a certain point because it was just like, it was a little more predictable and things like that. And he didn't want to try something new every time he went somewhere. So it's just always funny to hear, like, sometimes you just need a little taste of home, right?
And that's the thing. A lot of people, when they hear about overseas, like people, they'll go eat, you know, McDonald's and stuff. For them, that's an expensive meal.
Yeah.
And we'll go eat it and they'll be like, oh, like you're probably happy you're eating McDonald's. You eat that a lot in the States. And I tell people all the time, I'm like, no.
Yeah, I'm never.
Never catch a lot of people. Only people that go to McDonald's now is people that got kids and their kids want the Happy Meals and the toys right. And things, like chicken nuggets. I'm like, people don't go to McDonald's, like, or unless, you know, you had late night and you're drinking or something.
Yeah, exactly right. The College Park McDonald's got a lot of traffic. Yep.
Quick food or something like that. But I'm like, man, there's so much food in America that you could go. I'm like, Jersey Mike's, like Chipotle. I'm like, we have some really high-end fast food places you can go eat. And you're like, oh, this is way better than McDonald's. I'm like, why do you think we're so fat?
Yeah, the food's too good. I don't. I would never be able to play pro basketball for a lot of reasons, but one of them was I wouldn't be able to stay away from all the good food options we have
too many good food options, bro.
Is it ever weird to be on a team where some of your teammates don't speak the same language as you? Like, have you fully gotten used to that? Like, are there translators on some of these teams, or does everybody speak at least functional level the same language?
Yeah, some of them, if it's a team that's majority don't speak English, you'll have a translator. But most teams I've been on could speak English or speak the bare minimum or at least say hello. That's why, you know, you got to be able to fit in, because you know, it's already hard not knowing each other's. So they're learning your language and you got to learn some of their stuff. So, you know, at the end of the day, it gets fun, because most of the time, most people that play overseas, I'll tell you the first thing you'll learn is mostly bad words. They'll teach you all the bad words, how to
say. It's fun for them to teach Americans that too, right? Like,
and they'll ask us the same thing. Well, what's this? And you learn how to say, you know, a bad word before you learn how to greet somebody. Yeah, it's
love that.
It's crazy, but you know, like I said, for the most part, I've been fortunate enough to have most of my teammates know English, so
that's good.
It's been cool.
All right, I could ask you questions about this stuff for forever, go down memory lane for forever. So I'd love to have you back on sometime, but I'll wrap us up here for the most part. What's after? You know, I'm not to rush you through your playing career, but at some point, you'll presumably hang it up. So any thoughts on what's next? Would you like to stay in basketball? You know, where do you want to go from here?
I think I would like to stay in basketball, possibly getting to coaching, maybe high school, AAU team. I don't know. I would like to do that because I have a lot of knowledge of the game and a lot of experience. And I think I would like to give back and kind of do what Coach Turgeon did for me and mold these kids into young men, because you see a lot of kids nowadays going down a wrong path. And the fortunate part about when we were growing up, we didn't really have social media.
That's true. Yeah, not to this level.
Kind of kept you level-headed and different things like that. Nowadays, it's just you're just exposed to so much, and I think you need that type of role model in people's life to teach them and lead them in the right direction. Now, I would love to be a movie star.
I like that.
That's great. That's always been one of the things I would love to do. I don't think.
Have you seen some NBA guys transfer over, you know, crossover?
We have. I don't know where I would go to. I guess I probably have to go to act. I don't know what you would have to do that. I was hoping one day someone just come knock on my door. Like, hey, man, you're tall. You seem like you could fit this role. And I thought I could just go from there. But even some of the greats like Will Smith and Denzel Washington, Brad Pitt, they didn't even start like that. They had to go to school and get small roles. And I don't know if I want to have to do all that. I think I'm pretty established in basketball already. I think it gave me my opportunity. So I think I might just go down that path. But, hey, you see me in some movies down the road, don't say that. Just know I told you so. It's a possibility.
Hey, anybody in the movie business watching this right now, hit DeMonte up here. We'll put you in touch with him. There's probably only so many 7-foot extras and stuff out there too. So it seems like a good place to start, and especially more basketball shows and movies popping up too. That'd be another one it'd be natural.
I don't even want to be in no basketball. I want
action movies.
I want to showcase my talent. Put me
there, man.
Cry. I want to show people I could do all type of roles. I don't even want to be in no basketball movies. That's too easy for me.
I hear you, man. You've already played that role before, right?
I played that role. I'm trying to, you know, put me in a role of I don't know, Pursuit of Happiness, how Will Smith was.
So, hey, show the range off. I love it.
Yeah, that's awesome. Range, so I can get more roles, and they can say, okay, it's more than just a basketball role. You know, put him in everything. You know?
All right, Hollywood, hit our guy up here. We got to get some Terps in Hollywood here.
Yeah, there we go.
Last thing for you, just where can people find your story? How do they keep, you know, tabs on what you're doing? Any social media handles that you want to plug for folks?
So main social media that I use is Instagram. It's just my name, DeMonte Dodd 35. Twitter, sometimes I'm on Twitter. You'll see me catching on Twitter, retweeting things. I like to retweet my Bible scriptures on Twitter and different things like that. That's the R turn of 35. Don't ask why that's the name. I don't know. Young picked it. Yep.
Was just stuck.
Because what was I returning for? I don't know. I'd never left it. And then it is what it is. You can't change the name now. It doesn't let you. So that's what it is. So that's the main two things. And then basketball wise, I mean, they always, if you type my name in on Google, they always update that on Wikipedia or whatever team you're playing for. They update it every year. So you can always find basketball stuff. And I post my basketball highlights and stuff on my Instagram too. So you can also catch that. So that's the main social media platforms. I will get my Facebook, but I have some. You can go on my Facebook. It's not going to be hard to find because it still wants my name. But I have some very embarrassing pictures from high school on there. I keep just my family on Facebook.
We're the Instagram generation. We got to stick with that.
Yeah, we got to stick with the Instagram. If you go to Facebook, you're going to be like, oh, God, this kid was a lame.
And that's just every one of us, man. I'm old enough to have had MySpace. So there you go. It's even worse.
Oh, yeah, I had that. That would have time to be alive.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, that's another topic for another day.
Exactly. Yeah, we could do a whole separate podcast on just that generation of social media and what it was like. Demonte, this was awesome, man. Thank you so much for doing it. You're a great guest. You're a great guy. You were obviously a great Terp, so loved following you there, but happy to see that you're having success. And thank you so much for doing this.
No problem, man. Thanks for having me on.
All right, everybody, make sure that you rate, review, subscribe, hit the little like button if you're watching on YouTube. Make sure to follow Demonte, especially on Instagram, and always support our Terps. With that, we're presented by betonline.ag, and we will catch y'all next time.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.